Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you're listening to Fiber Talk, that twice-weekly podcast for people who do the fine art with needle and thread. And this week, Brendan and Karen Kirk. Hi, folks.
Hi, Gary.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Now, a couple of things here. For those who don't know, most people know, especially if you're cross-stitchers, know the Linen and Threads Mystery Stitch Along. And so it's Brendan and Karen that are behind that. And then they are also Fox and Rabbit Designs, and that's where the sampler world lives. And then Karen has, under Blackberry Rabbit, her own design work. So we're going to get to learn about all of that. And also, 200-plus episodes, and Brendan's our first male. So yay for that.
Yay.
Yay.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel very privileged to be the first male.
The ice is broken now. All right, look out.
So hopefully all those other scared males that stitch will come forward now.
Yeah. First, I don't know why. I just have never gotten around to inviting a male. And so you were the first one. So, you know.
There we go.
We'll take it. Mm. Yay. Yay.
Absolutely.
So, all right. So I have 1,000 questions here because there's nothing online about you guys. So I couldn't do any prep. So. We're going to do it. We're going to do it. Nice job of hiding from the internet.
Okay.
All right. So we have a husband and wife team, both involved in needlework. How does this come to be?
How did we both start doing needlework? You mean?
Were you doing needlework before you got married? Did it come after?
Oh, no.
How did this happen?
No. We've been married, 25 years next year. Brent and I have known each other for about close on 30, I suppose. But I've been doing cross stitch since my early 20s, but I think it was only probably about seven years ago, Brent.
Yeah, just a few years ago that I started.
Oh.
So Karen's had a cross stitch business.
Since 2000?
Yeah, since the early 2000s. And a couple of years ago, she was stuck with a model. She had a show coming up. And
I was desperate to get a model stitched, and I told Brendan he had to learn.
Yeah. So I was forced to actually stitch to get Karen out of a bind.
He's about 3 stitches in and just fell in love with it. And he's actually taken it a lot further than I have. He's done courses with the Royal School of Needlework. He's done, it's the Thistle Threads. He did the casket course for 2 years online. He loves all sorts of embroidery. I tend to do mostly cross stitch, but Brendan has just gone to a whole new level. He's doing, in fact, he just got a white work threads for a white work course he's doing in the mail yesterday. So yeah, he took it and ran with it. So
wow.
We've been doing it for about 7 years.
Yeah, about 7 years now.
Yeah.
Well, it really got in your blood then.
it's just so relaxing. But when you come home from work and you start to stitch and you forget about what happened during the day and everything that occurred.
Yeah.
You're just counting those stitches and pushing that needle through.
I must admit, when I asked him, would he have a go at doing this sample for me, I thought, oh, he's not going to do it. And he did. It literally finished it so quickly. And I sort of turned around and it was sort of quarter done. I thought, oh, my God, he might like this. And, so I created a monster.
Yeah. Well, it's a good monster.
Yeah. So, so that's how it all started. I personally started I used to work in radio. I was an audio engineer for many years. And in my early 20s, one of the girls, we all used to go down to the rec room at lunchtime and at 2WS, and we'd watch the soap operas during our lunch hours. So watching Young and the Restless or Days of Our Lives, one of the girls, Jane, had been a stitcher for many years. And I guess I'd always associated cross-stitch with, tea towels and things when I was a kid. But all of a sudden she was bringing down these beautiful frame cross-stitches and we were all amazed. And she said, well, we can come down here every lunch hour and I can teach you all how to do it. So she started about 5 people off on their cross-stitch journey and we never looked back after that. And I was probably about 23 back then. So that's how it started for me.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And Brendan, no pressure. I need a model. You've never done it. Stitch it. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and was it straight onto linen as well? So
you're not doing it on Ada. You're starting. You need to do this on linen. If I teach people how to cross stitch, I tend to, not that there's absolutely nothing wrong with stitching on Ada, obviously, but this particular sample had to be on linen, And so I said, well, you might as well throw you right at the deep end. So, and he took to it like a duck to water, fortunately. So, yeah, never looked back.
So what other techniques have you done, Brendan?
So the Thistle Threads course. So I've done both of the stump work and the casket courses. So that was 2 18-month courses. And I'm just starting now her white work course. So the kit for that just arrived yesterday. I haven't even unpacked it yet. I had a quick look at all the beautiful things that are in there, the beautiful linens that are part of the kit. But yeah, I've got to print that off today and actually start that course.
And how long has that one run?
18 months as well.
Okay.
He likes the long courses.
Yeah, so the courses from Thistle Threads are really good. I don't know if you've seen them before.
No,
so
I haven't, Trisha, no.
She does a lot of research. So she spends a lot of time researching each of the techniques, and you get thousands and thousands and thousands of pages of really detailed notes about the history and the techniques and how to do them, and lots of examples of different things. And she actually, through the course, teaches you how to, you know, be comfortable enough to run with it yourself and, you know, design your own parts of that needlework.
Hmm.
She's not just teaching you, you know, how to stitch a particular work, but she's teaching you the whole technique and the whole history behind that technique. They're pretty amazing courses.
Oh, thanks. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Brendan. This is what I need.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll end up with, you know, bookshelves full of, you know, beautiful instruction notes that you print out from the courses that you keep going back and looking for.
The Cabinet of Curiosities, which is the course he did for the casket, is 13 folders. In 13 folders he has in his cupboard here. So that's all full of lessons and guides and stitch guides, and it's probably the most, you know, the most detailed embroidered course I think in the world. Yeah. It's called the Cabinet of Curiosities.
Yeah, no, I've seen that. Did you find that really challenging, Brendan, or was the instructions good enough that you could just tackle it?
No, the instructions are really good that you get from Trisha, and you know, she steps you through. She provides for all the stitches. She provides they're like little videos of the stitches, so you can actually see how they're actually done.
Mm-hmm.
They're absolutely amazing, but yeah, they're challenging. It's not easy stitching.
Yeah,
some of the techniques that you're doing.
Work, stump work, it's all sorts of
stuff. It's pretty advanced. But the instructions that Trisha provides are step you through it step by step so that you have no problems with it. Plus they have a whole online community that if you have a problem you can post a note up about, and you know, if Trisha isn't there, there's hundreds of other people that are doing the course that step in and help you.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
Oh boy, I gotta check this out now. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. It hurts your bank balance.
Yeah, I know. That's the trouble. Yeah. Well,
Brendan has the same problem that most stitchers do, though. All these glorious threads he has now in all these beautiful sort of see-through boxes. So he's got to start doing things, but he doesn't actually want to use the threads because he just loves to look at them all day. So I think we all have that problem.
Yeah, that can be a problem, but, you know, whatever.
He loves to collect all the lovely silks and things. He's designing his casket now, so that'll be interesting.
Yeah, it'll probably be finished in about 40 years.
Yeah. Yeah, those things are amazing, aren't they?
Yeah.
So where do the samplers come in? Is that your fault, Karen, or is that Brendan too?
No, that's actually, well, we love antiques, but that was predominantly Bren. Bren started, I think you just tend to find a style you like, and he started doing research on antique samplers, and it just got a life of its own. He, particularly Australian samplers, they're hard to find over here. But, you just started researching them 1 year, and then I think you find the style that you like, and for Brent, it's antique samplers or that sampler look. And he just started researching them, and no, that was pretty much all you.
Yeah. I think it's just amazing that you look at these really pieces of artwork that are forgotten. You think they were done by, you know, preteen girls mostly. You know, they're done by candlelight. They're done on counts of linen that, you know.
Oh, 55 count plus.
We can't see without massive magnification. And yet these little girls, you know, spent every night after their work or after school sitting there stitching these most amazing needlework samplers. And unfortunately, not many people know about them.
Yeah.
A lot of them in private collections and never see the light of day. That's what we find here in Australia. But Brent's been, he's actually been asked quite a few times now to go around and do talks on antique samplers. He did one the other day at the Krill Goblin for their first sampler Saturday of the year. And that was hugely successful. So we took a lot of our samples of our original samplers, and Brent gave a talk for about 45 minutes. So that was, you love doing that, don't you? So,
yeah, sharing the knowledge. Hopefully, you know, encouraging other stitchers to look at samplers as something that they want to do. That's not something that's too scary to do. Because unfortunately, a lot of people see them and see that some of them are so big and they think that, you know, they're hard or difficult to do. So they, you know, they don't attempt them.
Yeah. I struggle with that because I'm working on a Hands Across the Sea sampler right now. And it's a giant thing, but yeah, it's just a whole bunch of little ones. What's that?
Which one of those are you doing?
Sarah Brazier.
Oh my gosh, that's huge.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Stunning though.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Oh, and it's just a bunch of
amazing work.
It's just a bunch of little samplers all put together, so, you know, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well, my theory is always when I teach people how to cross stitch, I think you should pick something that you really like at the end. Doesn't matter if it's big or small. Some people look at it and think, "Oh, but that one's too big. I love it." And I said, "Well, it's just one stitch." Well, in some cases, the samplers but I'm talking about just cross-stitch samplers. And I said, it just depends how much time you want to put into it. It's the same stitch. So I prefer to teach somebody where they love what it is at the end rather than some little beginner piece that they're never going to want, you know, to do anything with. So I just say it's one stitch. You're just going to take longer to finish it. That's all.
Yeah, yeah. We were talking, we were talking before we recorded about how Australia is 80% uninhabitable. And so, you know, it raises the question, if so little of the land can be lived on, then that means, is that harder to find samplers, fewer of them? Because you have a tremendous culture across that country from influences from all over the world. And I would think that there would be a pretty limited number of samplers, or they'd be hard to find, or I don't know. What are they? Are there a lot of old estates or what?
So we think there were a lot of samplers because you think Australia came from a penal colony from England. So we've got that whole English history. And across with that, all the schools came. And they were teaching needlework in the beginning of Australia. But unfortunately, in the 60s and 70s, Australia had this weird thing that happened where there was like a cultural cringe and anything historical was destroyed.
Oh.
You know, so like antique furniture was burnt and everyone put in
prefab 60s, 70s furniture.
People put in formica instead of, you know, beautiful cedar furniture that they burnt or they threw in the rubbish. And a lot of the samplers that were done were thrown out as well. A lot of the antique samplers and the antique quilts from Australian history, they were all just thrown away with the rubbish.
Ugh.
So they're really hard to find now.
I'm talking about the gentleman come up to us for a show one day.
Yeah, so, you know, we go to a lot of shows here where we're showing our needlework, and people are coming up and looking at our samplers. So we have either the originals there or our reproductions. And we had a man that come up really upset one day because he was looking at some of the samplers that we had, some of the reproduction samplers that we had, and he was telling us about one from
his
mum.
But it was his second great grandmother's or something being passed down.
Yeah, and when she died,
early 80s.
Yeah, the family didn't know what to do with it. No one wanted it, so they just threw it away.
It went to the rubbish tip.
Oh.
And now that he regrets it because he realizes now that's part of his family history.
He's an older man now, and he said it was a beautiful big pictorial sampler. The girls didn't want it. He didn't want it. All the old cedar furniture and the sampler and some of his mum's other stuff all went to the tip, the rubbish tip, as in, so it would have been just burnt. Brennan nearly collapsed on the spot.
That happens a lot.
We
so
get that story a lot.
We've lost a lot of our like folk history in Australia because of that.
The 50s, 60s, and 70s here, I don't know what it was like in the States, but the 50s, 60s, and 70s seem to be all about, you know, all the new, what kind of furniture, you know, all that kind of formica and
glass and formica
and modern sort of things. So it became very unfashionable here for about 30 years to have, you know, all that lovely antique stuff. It's very collectible now, but
I was going to say, now everybody wants it back.
Yeah. And things like quilts, you know, I went to a talk by Dr. Annette Gero about colonial quilts, and when a lot of the convict women came over, one of the governor's wife, I think it was, sort of gave them all this money to all these supplies to of you know, cottons and fabrics and stuff to make quilts, and a lot of them made them. But because it was a harsh kind of penal environment back in those days, they were mostly utilitarian. So a lot of things in those early days of Australia were used. So the quilts were actually used. So they wore out and were thrown out subsequently. They weren't kept because they'd had its life and they were in tatters, so they'd throw them away and go again. So a lot of these things have been hard to find. But you do get rare gems every so often, like our little Emily Trump one.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate name, but...
Well, yes or no.
Yeah.
In today's political climate, but
we aren't going to go there.
Yeah, but we found a little Australian sampler. So it actually came from a little girl who lived in Maitland, which is about an hour from us. We actually went back and tracked through, and we went and found her grave.
Yeah.
So.
So just so people know, you're outside of Sydney.
Yeah. So we're about an hour north of Sydney.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So we're on the coast, about an hour north of Sydney, just on the central coast is the area. So we live on a lake, and our lake's a series of three lakes that run into the ocean.
Mm. And Maitland is about an hour inland near the Hunter Valley, which is where all the wineries and stuff are. So yeah, Brent, we tracked down her grave, and
so you actually found you have the sampler, and you actually found her grave. Wow.
And the photo of her grave is on the actual chart.
Yeah.
So, with a bit of her history.
Because we actually bought that sample off her family. Her family didn't want it anymore, and they were going to get rid of it. So we bought it off them. It's only a little alphabet sampler. It's nothing.
Oh, it's sweet, though. I love it.
You know, it's not one of these magnificent, like, hands across the sea samplers. It's just a basic alphabet sampler, but it's...
It's rare because she was born in Australia, stitched it in Australia, and died in Australia. Most of them are imported. You know, they've been brought over. A lot of the ones you find here have been stitched in the UK or Scotland or somewhere like that, and they may have emigrated to Australia, so therefore they brought their samplers with them. But this one was actually done by a person living here, so that was why it's quite rare.
Yeah. So we're having trouble tracking down the actual Australian ones. We can prove they're Australian.
I say to people at our shows, and where we do shows, I say, look, you know, I hear about, oh, my, you know, I've got one that was my great grandmother's, and yet I always encourage them to show us because they're obviously in their homes and they're not in museums or anything like that. And you know, sometimes people are describing beautiful samplers, but they've never left their lounge room because they've been handed down through generations. And we always say, look, you know, just please bring them or send us photos. So because Brent sort of is researching Australian samplers, and we just want to see them. So if anyone's got any in their family and they want to share them with us, we'd love to see them because they're as I said, I think people don't realise the importance of them sometimes.
Yeah.
There's a few in museums, but not many.
But unfortunately, we're finding in museums. So the Australian museums, some of them have been collecting some of the samplers, and they've got some amazing ones, but they've locked them away.
Yeah, and that's the light of day.
But they actually won't let you see them.
Or you can make an appointment to go and see them, but they aren't on display, most of them.
But some of them are actually not even allowed to see them at all. They've actually put some conservatory block on them, and all you can get is photos of them. You actually can't go in and make an appointment to go and look at them, which is a little bit sad.
Why have them?
Well, that's my thought too. I know that they have to try to, you know, preserve them and stop them from deteriorating, but surely just, you know, even if you're allowed to go and view them, I know you can in most places in the UK, you know, even the V&A, when we were over there about 2 years ago, they hardly had any antique samples on display at that particular time. But you could make an appointment and go and view their collection. And you can in most places. Even in the US, we've found that you can make appointments and go and view lovely, you know, because obviously they don't want them out in the light every day. But, yeah, it's unusual here. We're actually trying to make an appointment at the moment to go and see a couple that are in one of the museums in Sydney. So we're in touch with them now. I think we're going to be able to go and see those, and with the hope to reproduce, I think there's about three of them.
Yeah, it's about three. So they're uniquely Australian samplers.
And if they're not in, you know, if they're not on display, well, you know, let's reproduce them so people can actually see what they look like at least. So, yeah, that's where we're at the moment.
Yeah, let them out into the light somehow, yes.
Yeah. I know. But see, we're about using, you know, We use the good china. We use the good wine glasses. I don't understand people who lock things away and use them for the special occasions. We use the good stuff every day. So I figure, you know, you don't know how long you've got on the planet, so use all your nice things while you've got them, I think. I don't understand people who hoard things away for special occasions. Yeah. Bring them out and see them.
With so few of them, do you find that they're generally in pretty good shape when you see them?
So the ones that the museums have, they're in amazing condition. But some of the ones that we've found, you know, they're in pretty average condition.
Yeah.
The climate's pretty harsh.
The climate's pretty harsh here, yeah.
So, yeah, that's what made me ask, is I was thinking
sunlight
that
is not conducive to.
Yeah, so a lot of them, when they're locked up in attics or they're put out in garages, the heat gets to them and they lose some of their color. And we've got a few where the ground fabric is, you know, almost gone. Yeah. So it's just disintegrating.
And sometimes, we've gotten, whether it be from Australia or overseas, we get some sometimes, and you can see over the hundreds of years, little moths have gotten in, and they're dead in there now, but they've eaten away at the fabric, which is sad. You sort of never know whether to take it out and get it preserved or what to do, but it's better to get it out just in case there is anything still eating it away. But right. Sad.
Hmm. So I
went to a museum the other day just to have a look at something, and Brent and I are both going down together, and I went late in the afternoon. It was a little one that, I'd never even been to. And the lady said, oh, I just put – they've got a lot of these antiques, of these collectible things in drawers, these big metal drawers, and you don't know what you're going to find. And I was the only one in the entire place. And I was just pulling out these drawers, and all of a sudden this stunning 16th century sampler was just sitting in this drawer. Well, it had like a Perspex top over the top of the drawer. But it was just laying in there in perfect condition. So, and it was a 16th century, amazing, obviously not Australian, but amazing sampler. And I just thought, oh, my God, it's just sitting in this bottom drawer in this place that no one's ever seen. So, again, we're getting permission to reproduce that one. That was I got home and I took about a million photos. And so Brent and I are going back to see that hopefully this week sometime, maybe tomorrow.
Are they generally pretty receptive to you guys reproducing them?
They seem to be, yeah.
Yeah, it depends on the museum.
Yeah.
Some of them are really happy for us to do it.
This one seems to be.
Others, it takes a
process.
Yeah, so some of them that we're wanting to reproduce, we've been in chats with them now for months.
Yeah.
The problem that we have is that they have trouble understanding what we're actually doing.
Yeah.
Oh.
So they're used to dealing with people who want to put the photos in a book.
In a book or whatever.
Yeah, but not someone that actually wants to create a copy. Of that work,
yeah.
So other people can do it. So a lot of it we're doing with them is the conversations we have with them too are educating them about what we're doing, and the whole community out there that's trying to preserve samplers and keep samplers alive.
But also too, I said to a lady the other day, I said Bren does a lot of research on the person to try to find as much as possibly can about them, and like there's one in this museum that we looks like we're going to be reproducing. They know nothing about the person. And I said, well, what's good is once we find all this information, we can then share it back to them so they can then put that information on display or, with that sampler so they've got more knowledge about the person. Because sometimes it might just have the person's name and year and they know nothing about the person. So they'll be getting that information back that'll help them for their displays and things as well. And they seem quite keen on that. So it's a bit of a reciprocal thing sometimes.
Yeah, you'd think they would be receptive to that, and it would get them them excited. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so they'll find out more themselves because they've got no interest in researching a sampler. Samplers aren't of huge importance in museums here, I don't think. It's more paintings and sculptures and dinnerware and things like that that were around in the early part of the days of Australia. They don't seem to be overly. They don't see the importance of things like samplers. Quilts probably a little bit more, but even quilts don't have the importance here, I don't think, in museums that they do overseas, that we've seen in museums overseas.
Yeah.
I think they see them as just being sort of handcraft. It's not all that important, not as important as sort of china or painting or whatever. So we're educating them as well as we go, aren't we, Bren?
Yeah, you got to help them understand how much history is involved in those threads, yes.
Yeah.
We also have a very small population compared to the rest of the world. I think the population of Australia fits in the greater London area, doesn't it?
Pretty much,
something like that. So,
Sydney's what, 4 million people?
4 million in Sydney, but that's I think what's the Australian population?
I don't know, 27
million or something. 26 million or something in the entire country.
Oh, okay.
So we're pretty tiny.
Yeah, yeah.
Big country, but a tiny population.
Yeah.
So when
that's again, the country's... you know, not really conducive to people.
No, that's right.
So when you get a sampler, what's your process for reproducing it? Do each of you have functions, or do you just...
Oh, that's always fun.
So both of us actually are involved in the process of reproducing the sampler. So sometimes I'll do them on my own. Sometimes Karen does them on her own, or we'll do them together, just depending on the workload that's going on at the moment. But yeah.
Lots of arguments there.
Yeah, there's always a lot of heated discussions around.
And it's mostly because I like one particular software program and Brendan likes another. And we can combine the two. We have a perfect software program. But there's things that his does that he likes and things mine does. And unfortunately, they don't do the same things. But we've come to a bit of a compromise. If I'm doing the whole sample myself, I then send it to Brennan and you can import it into yours and convert it. Yeah. So, I don't know. I'm almost at the point where I'm just like, we'll just go with yours, because he's quite passionate about the one he uses. So.
You've worn her down.
He has, I think, yeah.
I think she'll still sneak it in.
No. so I think it is a lot easier if we can just do that. And also, too, the software program that Brendan uses actually has regular updates. The one I use, which a few designers actually use, hasn't had an update in about 7 years.
Longer than that.
So if you have any new threads, say Wix, Styleworks, or Gentle Art have a new thread out, you have to manually add it and create that color, whereas Brendan can import them. Usually they're with an update. All the new colors will be there. So for that reason alone, I think we'll probably go with it. It's just a lot easier if we use one program. So, but also, too, there's a debate that goes on, and I know it goes on everywhere, as to whether do you create the sampler exactly the same as the person did, or do you fix that small mistake she might have made? And we're usually in two different camps when it comes to that as well.
No, it depends on the mistake.
Yeah.
So if she's done a border and the border's a repetitive border, but in one part she's a stitch out, or...
Yeah, Brett will fix that.
But otherwise, no, I'll chart it as the little girl stitched it, whereas Karen...
I'm a bit anal, so if there's an identical mode on both sides, and say there's two moths, and one side it's exactly the same as the other, but on the other side she put it down by two stitches, I can't stand it. It drives me mad, so I have to even them up. But pretty much we reproduce them as they were.
Yeah, so the hardest bit of reproducing with a lot of them is actually seeing the stitches.
Oh, my God, you should see the magnifiers we've got.
Yeah, because a lot of the samples we're buying, they're on 55 or 60 count linen, and you know, you just can't see the stitches.
So we have a massive fire with an LED light in it so we can see.
And a pin to sit there and count the stitches.
It's tedious work, but when you can see the motif on your screen and it looks pretty much exactly the same as what's on the sampler, it's quite rewarding. So but someone said to me, how long does it take you? I think sometimes we tend to be night owls. So sometimes Bren might be charting one, I might be charting another one, and we'll turn around at 3 o'clock in the morning. I think Nicola from Hands Across the Sea was saying the same thing the other day. Yeah. You just don't want to go to bed because it's all coming together and you're sort of, it's starting to look fabulous. You think, just one more hour.
I don't think Nicola knows how to sleep. So
I don't think she does either. Though. Nor does Sandra. We know Sandra quite well. Who's the other sort of?
Oh yes. Know, yes.
Kind of thing. So she's a very good friend of ours. We used to live around the corner from her when we were in the Blue Mountains. Had lunch with her last week, actually. And she's a bit the same. I know that if I've got some sort of historical question or something to ask Sandra, I know if I send a messenger question, it doesn't matter day or night, I'll have an answer within about 3 seconds. So, and Nicola's not much different, added the time difference. They're wonderful source of knowledge if we've got a question that we're not sure about. So there's an amazing sort of group of people out there that are very quick to help you if you've got questions about
Barbara Hudson as well.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Oh yeah, boy, there's a treasure trove of knowledge right there. Yes,
she's the loveliest lady. So she's always a great help as well. She's always encouraging Brendan right from the start, wasn't she?
Yeah.
So yeah.
never a shortage of enablers in this hobby. Mm-mm.
No. Yeah, that's right.
But the hardest bit about reproducing the samplers really is the colors. Is working out what colors to use.
And do you use the colours on the back of the sampler that are truer to the original, or do you use the more faded colours on the front? That's always difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always
We tend to go to the back.
Yeah, we tend to go to the back because we get more indication of what the colours were.
And sometimes on the front you might think something's all one colour, and then you look on the back and you realise there's two shades. So you get a little bit more depth in the motive or whatever.
And then obviously the next hardest decision then is the word that you have to use, over-dyed threads or solid coloured threads. So over-dyed threads, if we want to give the, you know, the sampler a sort of an old look, or...
Yeah, do you want it to look like it does now or look like it did when the person stitched it? Because obviously they wouldn't have had over-dyed threads back in the in the day. We tend to go towards Wix Styleworks, Gentle Art, Classic Colourworks in most of ours. But we've done a few in DMC or a Verisoir Silk.
Yeah, but we always give conversions to both. So
yeah, so if somebody does want to do them in the – or, you know, in budgets too, you know, if we're doing something in a Verisoir Silk, we always give a DMC conversion and, yeah, with the over-dyes as well. So people have a choice then. But we also have started – Brennan dyes a lot of his own linen, but we've been using Pictureless Plus and R&R Reproductions quite a lot lately. They've been wonderfully supportive too. If there's a colour that we're trying to get that they don't have, they've said that they will work with us on that. So, you know, there's a lot of companies that are – you know, Wix Styleworks Gentle Art just sent us thread rings of everything, so that's been wonderful. And, yeah, R&R is sending us a sample thing of all their fabrics. So yeah, there's a lot of decisions to make when you're doing it all. But we sit there. It's easy. It's good too when we do have the thread rings, because then you can match them closer with the original sampler. So that makes life a lot easier than trying to do it from a little shade card.
Right, right. Yeah. The when you have actual original Australian samplers, were they stitched in silk or cotton, or what was the standard thread?
Silk or wool?
Yeah, so we've got some. The Trump sampler was actually stitched in cotton.
That was a cotton one, yeah.
Yeah, but we've got a couple of others that are actually stitched in wool.
Mm.
Wool or silk seem to be.
And we've got one that's in silk. So I guess it really depended on what was around at the time.
And also the person's financial situation.
Yeah.
From a good home.
I would imagine an early Australia silk was pretty hard to get hold of, whereas, you know, things like cotton and wool would have been easier. Wool would have been really easy to get hold of.
Because we're obviously we were born off the sheep's back over here, so there was a lot of wool in this country.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it depended, because it seems to be the more elaborate samples we've got were probably coming from some of the richer homes, I would imagine. Same as everywhere, they were done in silk. Yeah. But we've just had one, ironically enough, that was on our doorstep this morning, which is gorgeous. And it's in really good condition. I can't wait to start this one because it's in the style that I like. And it's done in wool. We'll obviously do it in silk or cotton, but it's in really good condition. But it was wool, but it's quite elaborate. Usually your wool ones are a little bit simpler, but this is quite an elaborate one. It was done in like quite a fine wool.
Yeah, it's in the Berlin woolwork style. It's actually really
pretty Beta Meyer style, which is my favourite.
Mm.
So I get to chart and stitch this one. Oh, well, I don't know. I get to stitch it probably. Yeah. Probably one of our model stitches, but I'll get to chart this one. So that's just arrived on the doorstep this morning, so that was a nice surprise. And that's come from down from Queensland. So Brent's got to start researching this now. It's actually called Charlotte Mills 1844. So he now has to start doing some research on this one.
To find out where she came from.
Yeah. Is she Australian? Did it come over from the...
But there's not much information, so it's going to be pretty hard, and the name's a bit common. So I don't know how we're going to go, but we'll see what we can work
Brent
out.
Brent loves doing all the research on the genealogy stuff.
Wool on linen?
No, wool on this particular one is wool on canvas.
Is it canvas? Yeah. I thought it was linen. It's linen.
She is linen, this one. Normally, your other ones have been on canvas stuff.
Yeah, it's on a. It looks like a large 28. Looks like a 28.
No, it's about a 25 count linen.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I was going to say, how did they get wool thread thin enough to do higher counts? No,
it'd be a 25 count. Could even be 20. Yeah, that's why I thought it was canvas.
It's a crewel wool, so it's a thin wool. It's not a thick yarn, but
right.
It's a pretty little sample.
My friend's got another one there that's on canvas, and it's using quite a thick, almost like a tapestry wool. And that's quite a naive one, but it's a sweet little one. It's Australian.
Yeah.
But, I think wool was so readily available back in the colonial days that I think a lot of them were done. But a lot of the ones we see in the museum stuff are all mostly silk, I think.
Silk or cotton, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I just wondered, because given Australia's history, you would think that certainly silk would be hard to come by in the early days.
Yeah, absolutely. And they would have only been the wealthy families that were bringing them over from England or getting them sent over from England. They wouldn't, silk certainly would have been, I don't know, was it produced here?
Never here. No.
I don't think so. So it would have had to have been the wealthier families that had it sent over from England.
Yeah, because it would have ever come from France or China. So.
Yeah. Whereas the wool would have been produced here, I would imagine. Yeah. So, again, it's like most places, though. We go to, love some of these homes that are open to the public, like Vaucluse House and places like that, the samplers in there, they were obviously a wealthy family even back then. So they would have had everything sent over from England, I would imagine, which is why they would be the silk. But yeah, this is a beautiful one. So this one will be out at market next year, hopefully.
So you're working on stuff for the Nashville market already then?
Oh yeah. We learned our lesson this year, didn't we? Well, we only found out we got in October, I think it was. So we only had about 4 months to get ready this year. So, our model stitches, I think I said to you at market, we had Naomi stitching up until 3 o'clock the morning before we went and picked it up the next day. So we've promised them all that we'll have everything to them by no later than probably July, August. So, plus, that's better for us. We're going to have to take a lot more charts next year. We learned a lot of lessons this year that we didn't know how much to take, and so we're planning to do it a lot better next year. Oh, we had a great market, but we just know to take a lot more charts. You don't know. You sort of, how long is a piece of string? We sort of went roughly on what people said would probably be a good number to take for our first time, but fortunately, it was nowhere near enough. So. But we shipped all the orders out when we got home, and so next year we'll hopefully take enough that we won't run out. But you never know.
Yeah. No, I got the
good game, but yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I got the distinct impression that when you got home, you guys were very busy for a while.
Oh my God, 3 weeks, and we were sick as well. We came home with the flu, which I think a lot of designers seem to go home with, so something was going around. But yeah, it was 3 weeks. We did not hit the ground for 3 weeks. We're just shipping orders and to our distributors, and our distributors have sold out of a lot, so we've just sent the second shipment off to them, so it's all good. Yeah, I don't think we've had a chance to really sit down and sort of raise a glass of champagne yet. I think we've been too busy, but we'll start but we're literally back into this. And what we also know to do for Nashville next year is we'll have everything finished by the end of this year, and we'll have our model stitches already doing ones that we can release a month or so after market. So that way, it takes a long time to stitch a sampler. So we'll have them stitching those while we're away, so we can sort of do a release reasonably soon after market as well. So
yeah.
We're working on both Nashville. And also, too, we're working on ones that have got to be released in the next couple of months. So it's a bit of a – I kept saying to Brent, you think it's a year away. I said, it's only 10 months now. So,
right. Yep.
It's counting down. You think you've got a year, but you don't really. So
no.
But I think we've pretty much got all our Nashville ones either purchased or here, and in the design process now. So yeah.
So all right. So you keep all your samplers under the Fox and Rabbit Designs heading. How that works. And then
Fox and Rabbit does all the samplers, either the reproduction ones or the ones that we design
in that style. Okay. So originals, but in that reproduction style.
Yeah.
So we'll have a couple of originals next year as well.
Yeah.
But they'll have that antique.
Then the Blackberry Rabbit, then, that's all your designs, Karen?
Yeah, they're just mine. Yeah, it was a hard thing. We didn't know what to do initially because obviously we've been doing the samplers longer. And then I sort of started wanting to do some of my own designs. We thought, well, do we do it all under Fox and Rabbit? Which we were thinking of, but the styles are a bit different. So we didn't want to confuse, but then I don't know if it confuses people more having the two names. I don't know. But because mine are sort of more original, they're more sort of folk art, sort of quirky sort of style, we just sort of thought, well, if we keep them separate, it doesn't confuse people with the antique sampler sort of designs we have. So we thought, well, we'll do mine separate. Yeah, so mine tend to, I love bees, and I do a lot of things with bees and rabbits and houses and flowers and that sort of thing. It's still they marry up reasonably well with the antique samplers. It's not, it's not like I'm doing some modern, bright, contemporary designs, but we just thought if we keep them separate, it doesn't. There's some stores that we found in the States just want to, they just stock samplers. So, or they might just stock my designs. A lot of them did both. But
you do a lot of constructed work as well.
I do a lot of constructed things. I like boxes and bags and so I like, but I am going to do a few things like that with Fox and Rabbit as well. So if Bren gets a sample, it's got lots of motors. For what we'll do is I'll actually design little constructed things still under Fox and Rabbit, but where we take sample little motors out of that, and it might make a little needle book or a little box or something like that.
You've got a wardrobe coming out.
Yeah, I did from what was that one from? That was from I can't think which one it was. Which one was that one? Oh, it's terrible. I've gone blank. But there was a sample we released at market this year. I've actually made a constructed wardrobe, like a cabinet thing around that. So I'm going to be releasing that soon, and that'll go with that sampler. So we'll be doing a lot of little companion pieces under Fox and Rabbit, but my other designs will be just completely my own. So, yeah.
So it seems like you have a real strong interest in finishing then, too.
Oh, I love finishing. I don't understand people's aversion to finishing. I often finish things for my friends.
I think it's because it's intimidating, Karen.
I think so. But you know, one thing we found, Teresa Curry from Needlebling and I, we do some collaborative designs together. And we did one which we taught at market this year. And the one thing that we came away from, because I tend to show them how to do the construction side, is that they realize it's not as hard as they thought. And we're actually hearing over the Nashville weekend that, you know, people were sort of coming up and saying, oh, you made that look so much easier than I thought it was. And I think you've just got to, what I'm going to start doing in all my spare time is actually, start doing some tutorials online so that, you know, of the things that I do make, so people can see that it's not as hard as they think it is. Next year we're going to do a class together at market. We're going to do a 2-hour one next year, so there's more time to hopefully get close to finishing them. But no, I love doing that, and I like teaching people how to do it so they can finish themselves. You've got to get past that intimidation thing. I think they think they've done all this lovely work stitching it. What if I wreck? You know, what if I ruin
right.
it?
Right. Exactly.
I always get people to do it maybe in like a muslin or something first. So, you know, cut into some cloth or something and make it in that, and then once you've worked out how to do it, then cut into your needlework and do it for real. That's what I usually tell people to do, because you don't want to be cutting into that needlework if you don't know quite what you're doing.
So, yeah.
I'll be doing more constructive things.
So what is the fascination with bees? Because you have some pretty creative things that you do with bees.
And I'm bringing lots of bees out this year. So I don't know. I think when I grew up in the country, and I used to go out. My grandparents lived just up the road from us, and I used to have a lot to do with my grandfather. And he used to take me out to a property out of town, and the people out there were beekeepers. And we'd get all the honey out there, and we'd get the honeycomb, and we'd take the honeycomb over, and my cousin and I would just, you know, eat the honeycomb until we couldn't eat anymore. And so I think he always sort of told me how important bees were to the planet and whatever, and I think I've always loved them ever since then. So he was also an opal miner, so I also have a great love of opals. So I think a lot of things were shaped when I was young, I think, around my grandfather and things that he taught me and stuff. So I've always loved bees and rabbits. Hmm. Although the people in Australia think of rabbits as quite a pest, but I love them. So I just love bees, dragonflies. I love all sort of insects. So I'm doing a series of bees this year around spring, summer, autumn, winter, Valentine's Day. I'm doing a whole series. And there'll be 9 designs in that. So I'm working on those at the moment. Naomi, one of my model stitchers, is itching to get stitching on some of the bees. So I said, I'll have something to her soon. So, yeah.
Now, most of your designs are relatively small, aren't they?
They are. Yeah, because our set on the other, you know, for Fox and Rabbit, some of the samples are quite large. I like to keep them manageable. So I don't tend to do much. Even if I was doing a framed work, it would tend to only be, you know, I don't know, 12 inches by 12 inches. I like them to be achievable. So because I know that when I'm stitching a big sampler, sometimes I just want to put it down for a bit, go and pick up something that I can finish in a couple of days, or, you know, so I feel like I'm having a win. I'm having something finished while I'm stitching some other large thing. So I like to keep mine relatively achievable so that they feel like. So I think if you finish a design, then you can go back to your sampler and be all charged up, ready to go again if you feel like you've had a finish. that's my sort of thought. So So most of mine you can pretty much do in a couple of weeks.
Okay. Uh huh.
Yeah.
Now, Brendan, I first ran into you with the linen and thread sampler or mystery sampler, stitch along, because I ran into you because when we started with Nicola, the Sarah Brazier stitch along, we had tremendous response and really concluded that we had the most members in the group of any, just about any stitch along, except linen and threads. And people would mention that. And I go, what is that? And so I went and looked it up, and holy smokes, what a following you have. How does that how does that get started? Because that is and I'm doing this one this year just because it's smaller. But then I have the Peacock half done, so I'm already 2 months behind. But these people that 3 days after you release the thing that have it all done, I just want to scream at them.
Three hours after the Swan that came out this month, I think I know. Had it done 3 hours later.
But I then know.
They've got a whole month to wait until the next part, and I'm like, well, don't stitch it so fast. But they love it, which is.
Oh, I know when she posted that. Come on, really? I haven't even had a chance to download it.
I thought, wow, most people haven't even printed it off yet.
Right. So how did this all get started, Brendan?
So I was actually working on a design on the train going into work, and it kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And we're looking at it and thought, you know, that it's too big to do in one go.
Yeah. Also, we weren't well known then. We thought, well, how can we also, you know, get our name out?
Yeah, so we looked at it and thought this would be because it was a band sampler, that it would be easy to carve up into 12 pieces.
That was a 2017 one.
Yeah, and maybe that we'd offer it as a stitch-along, thinking that maybe we'd get a few people to come and join it and hopefully that, you know.
And so why don't we give this away for free? And I said, well, why don't we start a Facebook group? And he said, oh, there won't be anyone who won't join a Facebook group. I said, well, will you please just make one? We'll see how we go. Oh, my God. How many? I think we had 1,000 within a week, I think.
Yeah, it was just massive. It just really took off.
It just went crazy.
I think this morning there was almost 11,700 members.
Almost 12,000 members now, 2 years later, 3 years later.
3 years later. So it just grabbed a life of its own. I don't know why.
No, I think Sandra mentioned it on one of her groups, I think.
Yeah, but we're just grateful that everyone is doing it. It seems to have got a lot of people back into stitching as well.
Some of the stories we hear just make you cry. It's like, and the, you know, people have started getting together and meeting people they've never known, and now they're part of little stitching groups that, you know, in their towns that they didn't know anybody else, and they met up via the group. And
but we also hear from a lot of other shops as well, where they're telling us that, you know,
it's been great for shops
that, you know, it's bringing people back into needlework for them as well, as the people are coming into the needlework stores and wanting to buy the, you know, the linen or Aida to stitch it on, and they're buying the threads. And some of the shops have even actually starting running groups where, you know, one day a week they're all coming in and stitching the stitch along in their shop. It's amazing. It's grown.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, I didn't know it had that kind of reach. Wow.
Oh, my God. And I think there's a map on there. I think they've got all the different parts of the world. Someone's mapped them all. Wasn't Naomi mapped them all? And it's incredible, some of the parts of the world that you wouldn't even think they did needlework there. And there's three or four people in that country. And you think, wow. But I think I think they were surprised that we kept doing it free each year. And we got a little bit of criticism from some places saying, why are you giving it away? And it's like, well, why not?
Yeah, couple of people thought that because we were giving it away, we were cheapening the industry.
Yeah.
But
you're always saying
But I thought the opposite. You know, we're sharing it. We're hoping to encourage more people to come in.
So many have said, I haven't stitched for years, but I can do this because it's monthly. So it's not a big commitment every month, and they're finishing them, which is good.
But our first 2 years were really big samplers too, that you had to put a bit of effort into and a bit of commitment. So based on that feedback, this year we decided to do a slightly smaller one. So that each month's part this year is a lot smaller.
Yeah, smaller so some people can stitch it in 3 hours. Yeah, jeez, I can't believe that.
I know. But you know, it's so funny. You know, New Year's Eve is a huge one for us. We almost break the internet one year. But everyone, because they're trying to work out what midnight New Year's Eve our time is overseas, because obviously bulk of them are over in the Northern Hemisphere. And we keep saying, you're getting them earlier. You're getting it, like, it's today, it's Thursday here, and it's Wednesday your time. So they're actually getting it earlier than the first usually. Right. You've got no idea how many PMs and things that Brendan gets. You know, are you releasing it early this month? I'm going away. I need to take it on my cruise. Release it a day or so early. He gets inundated. It's unbelievable. But the amount of people who are sitting around waiting for the 31st to click over to the 1st of January is amazing.
Well, so see, and for people to complain that it's cheapening the hobby, you know, I just look at how many people have been off to the store to get linen or Aida and threads. You know, that's driving business for
even at market, Gary. Like, I mean, how many people come up to you, Brent, shops that said, "Oh, thank you so much for doing this."
Yeah,
because it's brought so many sales to our store, and you know,
right.
We don't see it as being cheapening the industry at all.
No, it's encouraging more people to do it.
Right. I have had so much fun. I really need to get back to stitching the actual design, but just watching the group and what people are doing, what they did with that peacock, and then how they're following it up in the other sections. It's just amazing the creativity that people have with colors and combinations. And I just marvel at what people are doing with that.
Oh, I know.
It's also amazing, too, watching people's confidence grow as well. So you see them when they're joining the group, and they're realizing that we don't tell them what color to stitch it in.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, it freaks some people out.
And you see all these messages where they're freaking out. You know, they want someone to help them pick colors. And then as you watch them over the coming months, and you see their piece evolve, where they're getting more confident in picking their own colors, and they're making the design really their own. And then they start to get even a bit more adventurous, and they start changing the design a little bit. You know, they're leaving bits out or adding bits in and moving things around it themselves their own, which is
somebody asked me the other day, does Brennan get offended if because that's 100% his design. I said, you know, does he get offended if somebody changes something, you know, maybe puts an extra feather in the tail? I said, no, not at all. I said, the only thing you've got to be careful of is that you change the design in, like, if they do something different inside the peacock, because if you change the actual structure of it, it may not fit everything at the end. So I said, as long as it's within that box or that frame, do whatever you want, but just don't make the frame bigger. Or right. I think people are thinking, oh, but I've got heaps of aided left. You know, a poor lady the other day, she moved the paths out by 4 or 5 stitches. I felt so bad for her, and it looked gorgeous. She said, I hope you don't mind. I'd like to make changes. I said, I've got plenty. I said, well, there's borders to come on the outside. And she said, oh, yeah, I've got plenty of Aida. I said, yeah, no, it's not the Aida. It's the fact that the border won't now fit. And so she's like, oh, no, I hadn't thought of that. So she's trying to wait till the end now to see if she can somehow make it fit. Yeah. But no, you don't get offended if people change things.
No, I think it's amazing that they get in there and make it their own. You know, it's a piece of needlework that they're investing hundreds of hours in.
But, oh, the colours that people choose. Sometimes I'm even amazed. And what I love this month is with the swans, people have done what the reverse stitching bring.
Yeah, there's...
They've done, like, filled in the negative space.
Yes, some, like a sissy stitching.
Like an Assisi topping. And
not seen that. So they just left the swan blank.
Yeah, they've filled the whole background in. There's been a few of those.
Yeah.
It's just phenomenal, the colour choices. You know, I'm just always amazed. And it looks like a completely different sampler depending on the colour choices. Some people do it all just in one colour. Others have just got, you know, a multitude of colours. Some do it in over dyes. It's just amazing.
Yeah, see, I'm doing – I have a grey over dye that I'm doing the peacock in, and then I'm going to do all the rest of it in a darker grey just to have that's just the choice I made. There was somebody the other day posted one that struck me as – really gaudy, bright colors. And I thought, whoa, that's interesting. And, you know, and I thought, you know, I'm not sure I'd have done it that way. Number one, I wouldn't have seen those colors going together, but it worked. But then I thought, now I got to see what she does, how she plays off of that peacock. And I got to see what she does with that, because that's going to be an interesting ride to see how that plays out. Yeah.
Oh, there's some brave color choices. Sometimes I've seen them come to life, and I've thought the same thing. I thought, wow, what where are they going? And then, you know, in previous years, and then you see them at the end and think, oh my God, that's stunning. I would never have thought of that. But I think they all get a bit excited. Brent actually comments on them and stuff, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, Brendan's commenting. It's like, oh, but what is good with almost 12,000 people and with majority of them being in the Northern Hemisphere, what's great about that now, it's almost like when, you know, if somebody has a big family and the little one can be looked after a little bit more by the eldest child. We get up and somebody will have asked Brent a question, and, you know, you'll be 200 answers have already been given to that person before we even wake up of a day. So they're all kind of looking after each other now, pretty much.
Yeah.
Aren't they,
Brent? Yeah, and it's a really big friendly group as well.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, we've been so lucky. You know how sometimes you see the big groups disintegrate with fighting, and right. We haven't had that.
No, yeah. we've got a really great bunch of ladies and men that are
There's part a couple of fabulous line. Guys stitching some beautiful Ed Roberts, I think it is, stitching a beautiful one. I think we've got 3 or 4 or 5 men in there now, which is good. That's growing.
Yeah.
But
there's some men in the hobby. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in yourself, of course. But we've also kept the rules a little bit tight in that we don't let things go off on tangents too much, because I find that if people start getting political or religious or something happens in the world and everyone wants, you know, we keep that out, because I think that's where I've seen a lot of groups implode when they've gone off on personal attacks and things like that. Right. We've been lucky. That many people around the world, we've been lucky.
Yeah.
I think people see it as we've had a couple of people who've had to, you know, kick out, but that's not bad considering there's nearly 12,000 people and it's generally just the friendliest group I've ever belonged to.
Yeah.
But they all want to know the theme for next year's from about, what, July, August, Brent will start getting what size fabric for next year, what's the design theme, and it's like, oh, my God.
I haven't even started to think about it yet.
Oh, my God.
Well, I was gonna say, Brendan, you've really created kind of a monster here, haven't you? A fun monster, but a monster nonetheless.
It's a nice monster, Mark.
I know, but you've got to come up with something new every year. And I think they've been amazed that it has. I think a lot of people thought after that first year, oh, the next one they'll charge for. There was one, I think by the third year, there was one people that said, oh, look, they're not making anything out of this. We need to start some sort of thing where we send them $2 or something. We shut that down really quick. We said, no, that's not what this is about. This is all, you know, so.
It's all about fun and stitching.
Yeah.
And coming together as a group. And
But there was one year I said, I made the comment, I think, after the first year, to make Christmas cards. I don't know. And I just said, just for whatever it's worth, don't anyone send me an e-card. I said, I like the Christmas cards I can hang around my doorway, our doorway and stuff. I said, I like real Christmas. So if you're going to send me an e-card or us an e-card, don't bother. And suddenly there was this, how many did we get, Brendan? We must have got, oh, my God, all the Christmas cards from all around the world, which we loved, because I use them as decorations. I hang them all around the door frames. And every day our mailbox was full of Christmas cards, which I just love that.
That's fun. Excellent.
Some people stitched the little motifs out of that first year and put them in the Christmas cards, and that was lovely. So yeah, that meant a lot to us.
Oh, that's and then to get them from all over the world—that's really great.
Yeah, it was incredible. Every day I was so excited because rather than bills in the mailbox, we were just getting Christmas cards, and that was lovely. So,
yeah, you were excited, and the mailman's going, "Geez, what is with these people?
What's going on here?" Absolutely. Oh, that was a nice surprise. So yeah.
Yeah. That's great. It's just a great phenomenon is what it is, but, it's so much fun to watch. I mean, even though I'm still back in January, I just really enjoy watching, as people put those things together and what they do with them and, the creativity, and it's just, but now I got to go check out the ones where they stitch the negative space.
That was recent. Well, obviously recent, cause it was this month's one. I've just been looking at some of the swans this last couple of days. Some of them are just stunning. I thought, wow, for a simple motive, they put 3 or 4 colours. There's a lot of white swans, which is interesting.
A few black swans.
We have black swans down here, by the way. We don't have white swans in Australia. And yet I don't think the Northern Hemisphere has black swans, which is interesting. We have white swans up there. So we have black swans on our lake here. And
there's been a few black swans that have come through.
So probably Australian stitching those.
Yeah.
The negative space one was really interesting. I thought, oh, what a good idea. And then a few people said, oh, that's a good idea. I hadn't thought of that. I'll do that. And that's another good thing. Sometimes if you are a little bit behind, is that sometimes that's helpful because you'll see what other people do in front of you and you think, oh, that's something I wouldn't have thought of. I'll do that now.
Right.
But have you named your peacock, Gary?
Have I what?
Have you named yours?
You mean Fred?
Yeah, is it Fred?
Yeah.
Oh, there's a database of the names now. There's some amazing names.
Yeah, no, mine was Fred before I put the first stitch in. Yeah.
Some people have asked us what our peacock was called, and I said Andrew. I said the only ones that'll get that are probably Australians. We had our Prime Minister here who was Andrew Peacock many years ago.
That's
what we called ours. But have you seen all the peacock? We have, even though it's a little bit off topic, we have actually didn't stop those. Did you see the there's been so many pictures that people have been sharing of peacocks around the world.
Oh, I know.
Artworks or textiles and
just different coloured peacocks.
Different coloured peacocks.
Sculptures. I didn't know they come in different colours.
Yeah, sculptures. China. It's just been amazing. Now it seems we've gotten a life its own. Everyone just finds an obscure peacock and they're posting them. And I love those.
Yeah, there was the rocking chair that was all painted in peacock. That was amazing.
Wasn't that amazing? Yeah. Oh, my God. That thing belonged in a museum. That was amazing.
There's been dresses.
Oh, yes. Did you see the one with the dress? It was like a couture gown that the whole back was all peacock embroidered. Oh, my God. Yeah. That was incredible.
Yeah. And then of the actual animal photos, the one of the white one, I did not know such a thing would exist. Yeah.
Yeah, we saw one once in a zoo or something here.
Yeah.
And it had its tail up. It was stunning. But, so that's been a bit of fun too.
Yeah.
Every day I'm seeing new peacocks on there. So.
Yeah, no, it's a big hit. There's no doubt about it. Huge hit. Yep.
So you have to start asking him, what's his theme for next year, Gary?
No. I feel for you, Brendan. I really do.
He has no idea what his theme is. You'll start work. I've got to start working on that soon.
I feel for you. You started this ball rolling, and there's no stopping it.
But that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, look at the excitement you're generating. I mean, it's that alone is worth everything. You know, and we've talked on many shows about with designers about feel free to change the colors. You don't have to go with what I designed. And we've talked many times about how people are hesitant. You know, they're not sure. They're nervous, and your designs allow them to do that experimenting and play around. And I think I'm more than confident it's helped a lot of people just gain that confidence to change colors, try different combinations, and I have to believe that has spilled over to other projects that they're doing.
Oh, definitely. That's why he'll always do like a one color. It'll always be a one color one. So that, because imagine if you did one where you actually charted colors, people would be lost.
Yeah.
They like everything. So it'll always be that one color and go from there.
Yeah. Yep.
That way that's the whole fun of the whole thing, but it's the friendships too. I'm just amazed how many friendships have formed through total strangers. You know, I think some people have been lonely. Some people are lonely and they might just sort of say, and it's amazing the support they get. And that's what it's all about. So.
Yep.
There's a lot of lonely people out there, and if they can make a friend that they didn't have yesterday, then that's what it's all about.
Yep. No, it's a great thing. It really is. It's a lot of fun, and obviously it's just generated a lot of enthusiasm and excitement.
What's interesting, too, though, is we have like trolls and stuff coming on the group, we have like a questionnaire thing, and the last thing is, where did you hear about it? And, oh, my God, that's been the biggest difference in the last 12 months, Brent, is the places they've heard about it from.
Yeah, it's some really weird, obscure places and
Lost Tubes and
your podcast.
Your
a lot
podcast,
of them come from.
Yeah,
oh. We're grateful for.
Oh, that's good.
The Embroidery Skills of America is a lot.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are from my local shop. We're in a stitch along here. We meet once a week or once a month or something. And I think, wow, that's nice to hear that shops, are having stitch. Having people meet up. That's good for them, I guess.
If I was a shop, I'd be working that thing 6 ways to Sunday. I'll tell you.
Absolutely, and encouraging the more colors, the better.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Imagine we've got a new color this month. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's a built-in monthly event. There, that's easy.
It's funny when we were last year, we went for a holiday after we went down to Florida, and we went to see Peggy at Tampa Bay, I can't think of it, Peggy's Framing Cross Stitch or something. And when we'd met her at market, when we said, well, if we can, we'll drop in, and we did. And, oh, my God, she was on the phone to all these people that were doing Brent Stitch Along, and they're all racing. We said, oh, well, we can stay for about an hour. And the amount of these ladies that come tearing in just to meet Brendan, the photos were being taken, and it was like a rock star in there. I was just standing back thinking, oh, I'll just hold the bag, shall I? So yeah, so that was lovely. Peggy was so excited, and the people that were in there were just, oh my God, it was so funny.
Oh, that's
like,
great.
Well, wait a minute, so Mary's coming. She's just dropping the kids off somewhere so she can run in, and they all come tearing into Peggy's shop. So that was, and she's got a lot of people doing it there, which is good for her business. So she was a lovely lady. So that happened where we went. Yeah.
It's a great thing. All right, we're going to have to stop here, darn it. This has been fun. Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been great.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the time, and thanks for doing it, and thanks for everyone for listening.